Guardian Unlimited.
I'm Alok Jha, and this is Science Extra from Guardian Unlimited. Thank you for downloading this exclusive interview with Sir David Attenborough. Over the next 15 minutes, you'll hear Guardian science correspondent James Randerson quiz the veteran environmentalist and wildlife broadcaster about his views on global warming and whether Sir David should be using his public profile to campaign more against climate change. We begin, though, with the issue of overpopulation.
Overpopulation has great implications on the natural world, great impact on the natural world, and has caused all sorts of problems. One of them has now suddenly materialised, to wit, climate change, and we are all getting very concerned about it, to a selfish degree, of course, and why not? I mean, we look after ourselves, there's nothing wrong with that, but that at the same time we ought to be thinking about what it's going to do to the natural world and what sort of impact there will be on that. The world is not stable, it never has been stable, but it is changing very fast. But coupled with that is the fact that we have, in between the last, as it were, mega changes, we have occupied so much of the land that there are no longer the wildlife corridors that there were in the past, which enabled species to cope with this sort of thing.
Which sort of species do you have in mind?
Well, any. I mean, any in Europe. I mean, whether it's insects or whether it's bird or whether it's mammals. Whether it's polar bears that have got no longer a place to hunt, or whether it's birds coming up from southern England and coming into a big one from northern France or from Europe and coming into southern England. So there's a whole migration, and it'll happen in Africa too, and with desertification.
Are these sort of changes that you've seen happening gradually over your career, or is it this sort of too subtle to sort of perceive?
No, I mean, because the paradox is that I probably am less aware of the damage to wild parts than anybody, because my job is to make films about rainforests or tropical swamps or whatever, so I go where they are and I don't go where they've been destroyed. And so if anything, I have a rosier view of what's going on than otherwise.
Do you think there's a sense in which those beautiful programmes can project also a rosy view themselves?
Well, yes, certainly so. I mean, and if it were that the television, all that television did was to simply to show you the rosy view and never actually tell you that there was in danger, you would be in real trouble. But the notion that if anybody was suggesting it, that television should only show the dangers and never actually celebrate what it's there for, it would be very silly indeed, because the fact of the matter is that over 50% of the world's population has become urbanised. To that extent are cut off from the natural world. They don't know what the natural world is. I mean, an awful lot of people never see anything truly wild from one day to the next. I mean, unless it's a pigeon, that's not truly wild. So you've got to cater for people who are living in urban circumstances in all parts of the world, and for you to say things like, you know, we've got to sacrifice this for the Javan rhinoceros. And people say, well, why the hell should I pay any care about the Javan rhinoceros or the giant panda? And so part of the job of television is to make sure that the audience knows about the natural world, which is important to us for all kinds of degrees and for reasons and all levels. I mean, partly in terms, if you don't have a healthy environment, we aren't going to be able to grow food.
What kind of solutions do you think we should be really pushing on in terms of climate change?
Well, I'm not a climate chemist. All I'm asking for, the simple solutions or the simple responses which I can think of, is protect the wilderness. Because the wilderness has a huge effect upon us from all kinds of degrees, including climatic ones. If you lose the rainforests of Borneo and the Amazonia, you are going to have a profound effect on the world's climate, apart from anything else.
Do you have any views on kind of which policy options are a good idea, things like nuclear power, renewables?
I don't particularly want to go into the nuclear debate, really. So I don't have a particular view on that matter. But, I mean, there's still a great deal that all kinds of people, ordinary people can do, and you and I can do, that need doing. What is required in human beings is a moral change. And that sounds portentous, I dare say. But I'm old enough to remember the war. I was a child during the war, and in the war you ate what was on your plate, not because you thought you were going to defeat Hitler next Tuesday if you ate up that little bit of gristle, but that it was actually wrong, morally wrong, to waste at this time. Well, now the feeling is growing that it is morally wrong to waste energy because of the pollution that creates. And that people will begin to feel that it's morally wrong to drive cars that consume very much more petrol than they need, and that it's to leave the lights on overnight for no reason at all, except you can't be bothered to turn them off. And that may sound rather ambitious or optimistic or perhaps naive, but in fact these changes do occur. I mean, I'm thinking of changes, for example, I mean, over a period of about 25 years or 20 years, it became, when you started, it was perfectly acceptable that people should own slaves and treat human beings that way. And within a quarter of a century, it was intolerable. So these changes can take place. I'm not saying they're equivalent, but they can take place. And I believe there are signs of it taking place. Certainly over the Western world, there is that move. And of course, it is the Western world where this pressure needs to be felt.
And what are these signs that you detect?
You don't miss the newspaper any day without seeing stories about it. I mean, it is part of the problem about lecturing about it is everybody's probably sick to death of it. But that doesn't make it less important.
And, I mean, one part of perhaps this moral case would be flying. I mean, that's one thing that people are particularly concerned
about.
Yeah,
I don't think... Yeah, sure. And it is pie in the sky to suddenly say, oh, everybody's got to stop doing anything. And that's why the emphasis is on the word waste. One should avoid wasting these things and doing it for no good reason. Of course, you can't say that. I mean, me of all people, I've spent my life swanning around the world in aeroplanes. How could I suddenly turn around and say it's wrong? What I'm saying is that we shouldn't be doing it for no good reason.
You're really talking about kind of attacking the demand side of the equation, but doing it in a way that says, you know, at the moment we're so profligate, we're wasting huge amounts of energy, and there are a lot of easy wins.
The cliché is golden bullet or silver or whatever. And there's some American people who are talking about slicing it and taking sections at a time. And that's true, and it seems to me true. I mean, all these things have to be done, and then we may bring things down. If we can keep it to 2 degrees, I mean, there again, you see, I mean, what am I doing? I'm regurgitating what I read in your newspaper and everywhere else. And I'm not a climate chemist, but I am perfectly persuaded that the issue about global warming is a real one, and that we are headed for a great worsening of the conditions on this globe for life of all kinds. And that I have no doubt whatsoever that of the cause, which is the byproducts of humanity's activities, and that therefore we should be curbing them.
You're not a climate chemist, but you know you have as good an understanding of the politics much of a right to comment on the politics of it as any of the rest of us, and you also have an impact on the public debate, which
that means you ought to be more careful. You ought to be commensurately careful about, or proportionately careful about what you say, because I've got to recognise that because I appear on that thing over there, people think I know about things. The complexities of climate chemistry, atmospheric chemistry, and the tactics and practicalities of politics are things I have special knowledge about any more than you or any other reasonably concerned individual.
You know, there's plenty of waste of energy and fossil fuels in the West to cut, but in the developing world, of course, there isn't. And in places like China and India, that you could have people, you know, who start using an awful lot more energy, and you know, everything we do in the West won't make much difference.
Well, again, giving you second-hand opinion, but those who know China and those who know India, oh, I was talking with them the other day. Saying, oh no, they're taking it very seriously. They really are taking it seriously. They see what these problems are, and they're anxious to do something about it. I hope that's true.
Mm. You've been very, very clear on the nature of the problem, that we're causing it, that it potentially is a big problem for the natural world and for us. I think perhaps some of your greatest admirers in the past, I know you've talked about this before, but some of your greatest admirers in the past might have hoped that you said some of those things a bit earlier. Does that come down to what you were saying about, you know, not using your persona, you know, when you don't...
Until you know. Mm. But there are two elements to it. I mean, that is certainly the case, that if you have a reputation, particularly if it's a reputation which is vaguely in this kind of area, you want to be quite sure that you know what you're talking about, and that you aren't being a scaremonger or falsely optimistic. Or you have to be careful about what you say, because for better or for ill, people take notice. Second point, you can't be sure, or we couldn't be sure, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you couldn't be sure whether the climate was changing until it had already changed beyond the expected parameters that you knew sunspots, climatic variability and various other things were doing. You couldn't be sure that the graph had risen above that. Although you might be suspicious, and although you might be saying, the meteorologist very correctly said, no, hang on, you know, there was an ice age here in the 17th century, you know, the Thames froze over, and we've had heat waves, so be careful before you say that we really are. Okay, well, 10 years or so we got beyond that. But that simply raised another question as to why we got beyond that. And could we be sure that it wasn't sunspots, and could we be, etc. As far as I was concerned, what absolutely convinced me, I went to a lecture in Liège, in Belgium, of a very distinguished American climatologist called Ralph Cicerone, who showed a series of graphs of measurements of all kinds of complex chemicals and components within the atmosphere that they'd only recently had the apparatus to identify. And he showed them one after the other, and they go up like that, they go up like that, they go up like that. And then he superimposed upon it carbon dioxide, and it goes up like that. And then he superimposed upon it humanity, the human population, and it goes up like that. And if that isn't evidence, I don't know what is.
And do you think, you know, with hindsight, knowing the evidence now, do you regret not speaking more forcefully earlier? Or if it had happened in that order again, you would do it again?
No, I don't set myself up as a sort of... as a prophet, or I mean, I'm a member of the public. I'm not this great expert, you see. Which I mean, you're trying to impose on me an authority which I don't have. And it is an odd and inexplicable concomitant of television fame that people think you know what you're talking about, which you don't necessarily.
Some more than others.
Okay, and I would talk to you about, I can talk to you about the origin of the tetrapod limb and paleontological evidence about, yeah, I know about those things. But this is very complex, and so you have to be sure. It's a response. You have a responsibility if you have this sort of thing to make sure that you know that you're absolutely convinced what you're talking about.
Did you, on a slightly different tack, did you see the paper that's in Nature today, or maybe reports of it, about bipedalism?
Yes.
And yeah, I thought that was interesting idea.
Well, the trouble is, if I may say so, that every newspaper report, I mean, I understand why, you know, we're both in the same business, but it doesn't actually a vast fundamental change in Darwinism or primate evolution. I mean, the fact that we didn't have a knuckle walking stage, whether we did or not, is not actually crucial. The fact that we're primates and descended within the last 5 million years or whatever. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting, but it's non-proven.
Well, yes.
And at the end of the article, said very, very accurately how is it? Well, I didn't say how is it, but he said, you know, all the primates to which we're most closely related are African. They're not Southeast Asian. Mm. The orang is a highly specialized brachiating primate, and it sounds like you're a zoologist.
I am. Yes.
Yeah. Well, that, well then
I did the same course.
What
as
I'm
you.
Talking about. Yeah. I mean, this is a highly adapted, specialised creature, and not at all the kind of basic animal that you expect us to be derived from. Mm. I mean, it's a parallel, but it's no more than a parallel. It's not that.
That was James Randerson speaking with Sir David Attenborough. For more interviews like this and the very best news and views from the worlds of science and technology, make sure you listen to Science Weekly at guardian.co.uk/science/podcasts.
Guardian Unlimited.